Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohlig, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Would you ever be? I'm Michael Sterling. Who are you, sir?
I am Mark Aidan Gray. I am not Paul Strohlig, thank God. That's for Paul listening.
It's the little things that we have to be thankful for, right?
Yeah, it's all huge in
yes,
this case.
Paul Strohlig is on an extended vacation, or a vacay, as they say here in Los Angeles.
Yes, I spoke
on
to him
the East
morning.
Coast.
Yes,
he's in Chicago today, isn't he?
Freezing his proverbial nuts off in Chicago. He said it was right at freezing today.
And he has some nuts.
He does. Almost as big as his feet. We'll talk more about that another time.
Or not.
Yeah, that's all right.
All right.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much for asking. Just a little late getting to the studio today, but I always kind of fly in by the seat of my pants.
Yeah, so you did it. You made it.
Yeah.
We were ready, me and my two lovely guests were ready to just take the ship for the hour.
Yeah? You were? You were going to do this without me?
Sans script? Well, if you didn't show up, what else? What a choice did we have?
Of course. You know I wouldn't leave you in the lurch.
No,
Mark.
I appreciate
that. Not on
that.
Your second day.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And how was your week?
My week was good. I had Dad visiting from Australia. Which actually gave us the occasion to do things we wouldn't normally do, such as go to the Skirball Center. Have you seen the Noir exhibit at the Skirball?
I have not.
It is emigres from Germany during the Second World War to Hollywood, and it covers the Noir period, Billy Wilder, Fritz Lang. The exhibit, I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Really?
Terrific.
Very la-di-da weekend with the
quite cultured.
Yeah?
Yes, indeed. That's the way we roll.
Well,
Australia.
That's Los Angelinos should take advantage of that, sitting in our midst, and probably many people haven't yet.
So. Yeah, I don't think so. And we saw Interstellar as well. So I'll be interested to know my guest's thoughts and your thoughts. Have you seen Interstellar?
No, I have not.
So it's, you know, a lot of it's about relativity and how 3 hours can seem like 100 years on another planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
sometimes
film,
like this show.
Yes, and the movie. I think the film did it beautifully. I felt like I'd been sitting there for 8 hours. I want to know their opinions on this.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
You know what we should probably do, Mark, is thank our sponsors.
Yes.
So we'll start by my thanking Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com. This is my sponsor voice right now, one of the internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And Mark, I know that you, like myself, are particularly excited to speak with our guest today, and we'll get to them in just a bit, but let's at least appease our listening audience by first saying hello to each of them, okay? She became a star on The Great White Way in New York when she was cast as the ingenue lead in the classic Broadway hit classic Broadway hit La Caja Falls.
Los Angeles Caja Falls.
That's exactly the
format.
We have one here, too. Yes, we do. Simultaneously, she was cast as an evil young villainess in the hit NBC daytime soap Search for Tomorrow, both of which she did for a year. How would you possibly manage that? Say hello to Leslie Stevens, ladies and gentlemen.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's
there are
right.
Tiny people
hello.
Applauding somewhere. Hello.
Nice to see you.
Hello.
And also, yes, are we going to introduce both guests
yes,
right
we are.
Now?
Yes, yeah.
That is fantastic. Just let me quickly rush to the to
oh, you
introducing
know,
him.
Yes, I see what you're talking about
yeah, that's
there.
Right. And prior to helping launch The Company Men, which we're going to talk about, our next guest appeared in the hit feature film Man of Steel, directed by Zack Snyder. He's appeared on television numerous times, including guest spots on Major Crimes, The Closer, I'm in the Band, The Young and the Restless, General Hospital, As the World Turns, and Guiding Light.
Yep.
On stage, he's been seen in over 36 regional and main stage touring productions, including the National Tour of Camelot, starring Michael York, The Ten Commandments, starring Val Kilmer, I wish I'd seen that, at the then Kodak Theater in Los Angeles.
No, you don't.
Okay, thank you. Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Annie Get Your Gun, and Beauty and the Beast, among many others. Concert credits include headlining alongside Dick Van Dyke, which I think is wonderful, Judy Kuhn, Paige O'Hare, Jodie Benson, and Alan Menken at the Hollywood Bowl, and headlining the Atlanta Pops, and featured appearances with the Philadelphia Orchestra and the Indianapolis Symphony. He's tall, he's tan, he's young, and he's lovely. I did not write this, but that is true. Please welcome Stuart Ambrose.
And
thank
he's
you.
Blushing.
Thank you.
So How are you, Stuart?
I'm good. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, you just got off a plane, didn't you,
last night? Literally just a few hours ago. Yeah. So we're still recovering from about 3 weeks on the road. So it's kind of crazy.
This group has just taken off.
It's going really, really well.
Yeah?
Really, really well. We're very happy, but let there be no mistake about it. Life on the road is tough. It's exhausting.
Well, you're right about that. It's not easy, and people think it's so glamorous, and it's not. You just kind of wake up and don't even know which city you're in, right?
Yeah, and that's the wonderful thing about it is you get to meet all these incredible people and have these great experiences and do all these really tremendous and wonderful, wonderful things. But you pay the price, you know, because you sleep for a couple hours, you get up, and you do a PR event, and then you go back and you grab a quick bite to eat, and then you rush off to load in and sound check, and then quick bite to eat, do the show, meet all the guests, and then, you know, just kind of, you know, sleep for a couple hours, repeat all over again. So it's, again, we're very lucky, we're very fortunate, and we're so grateful for all the opportunities we've been having. But yeah, it's tiring.
You don't sound grateful. I just wanted to say that. But you know, when I walked in today, Sterlo, there was a guy slumped on the couch. I thought it was a homeless person. I was going to call security. Stuart's so exhausted from being on the road. He's a mess.
He was sleeping on the couch in the lobby?
Yes, unshaven.
Not even in the green room?
No, that's right. Holy flies Lord. Buzzing about his head. It was really... But we'll get to you too shortly.
Yes, we will.
So how was your week?
It was good. You know, I have a little place here in North Hollywood, which Leslie and I were talking about a moment before the show went up, which is called Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
Yes.
I think you're aware of that as well. And, yeah. And something I produce every year called LA's Next Great Stage Star, which is the only musical theater competition of its kind on the West Coast that allows young people the opportunity between 18 and 28. They have to audition for us, of course, but it gives them a platform to be seen by the hierarchy, really, of Los Angeles musical theater professionals, you know, that are doing the big shows here in town.
Yeah.
So it was this year's winner making her debut in a concert setting at the club, and she really did an amazing job, and she's a lovely young lady by the name of Jennifer Kranz.
Okay.
And she brought the house down. She really did. Yeah.
Very exciting. Was she nervous beforehand?
Quite
a moment for her.
Very nervous beforehand. But you know, as even the best of Broadway professionals who have not done a concert act like that in their careers will come and headline for me and be backstage just pacing like a cat, because they said it's very unique. You know, you're not surrounded by sets. You don't have a script necessarily like a book musical that you memorized, and the costumes and so forth. It's very much being in one with the audience and very raw. And it's all about you. Everybody
right.
is there to see you.
Yes.
So
and the immediacy.
Anticipation factor is huge.
Yes. And the intimacy and the immediacy
exactly.
of that space.
Yeah. And I think it's comparable to any great experience you could have in the theater is to have your own show. And I know that Leslie, our guest here, has done her cabaret shows in the past, right?
Actually, I've just stuck my toe in to be a guest and do one song. So that's not the burden at all. That's like a pleasure to... You have your one little piece of the world you're holding up, or one little story, and you can certainly pace and obsess about that. But I haven't done what you're talking about, which is exactly that. You're not, in the comfort of a script or a pre-written story, but something that you've created. So then your Fanny is showing in another level, too.
Right. Fanny exposure, that's right.
The Fanny factor.
Yeah, that's right. It's big.
At any rate, thanks for asking. So that's we're in that process of heading now into the auditions for LA's Next Great Stage Star 2015, which come up in December, the auditions, and then the competition for its ninth year launches in January.
It's
for
so
six
great.
Weeks.
Do they show up and they do a number, one number? How does that work?
Well, you mean in the competition?
Yeah, in the auditions.
Every week, all 20 contestants compete, no eliminations until the last week, and 26 major players in town come through and judge this competition, and then they all return at the end for the finale. And that's the only time when 15 of those kids are cut on that last day.
What a moment.
And the judges then have the prerogative to save one of them and call them back into the top five, adding another would be top six.
Yes.
But I will tell you, the joy of all of this is that 11 of our kids have now made their Broadway debuts, and two or three of them are on their third and fourth Broadway shows at this point.
When did you start doing this?
In 2007.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
So it's just grown and grown and grown, taken on a life of its own. But and everything good with you other than the dad? And,
everything is terrific. Just working on my own projects.
Yeah.
And things. I just found out that my Rizzoli and Isles guest star is coming on next year. They've been on hiatus, which is, you know, you do a show and then you look forward to being able to see your work. And they decided to cut the season in half, which was odd. And so it'll be back next year. So I'll let the listeners know when that's going to happen.
Will you?
Absolutely.
All right.
So they can see me ruin the reputation of that show in one fell swoop.
What were you playing in that episode?
I was playing a man who was taken advantage of by kind of a snake oil salesman doctor who gave him this miracle cure that didn't work. And then much hilarity ensues, which I don't want to spoil the story. So, but wacky and zany stuff happens after that.
Oh, cool. So I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
You know... We've got Mr. Ambrose here. I think he's fully awake at this point, right?
He's
kind of blinking a lot, though.
A little bit.
You've got a nice suntan. Where'd you get that?
I'm not exactly sure because we were kind of holed up on the bus, and the East Coast is really, really cold right now. I grew up in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is cold. New York is cold. They're all very, very, very cold right now, and we're kind of turned into these, you know, anytime it drops below 60, we're shivering and, you know, wrapping up. So I'm not sure. I guess I've kept it. I guess I did a good enough base this summer, so it stayed true.
Well, you know, we've got a track, Mark, that is from The Company Men, which is the group that, of course, Mark was... Stuart was a part founder of, and it's a fabulous, fabulous company of men that really just quickly tell our listeners how the group formed. I mean, you were all individually had something else going on when this came up.
Exactly. Yeah. We formed 3 years ago. Before that, we'd all been performers in and around Los Angeles or New York, and we'd kind of drifted away from the business because we had to support our families. And so we all had kind of acquired these 9-to-5 jobs. One of us was an executive recruiter. Another worked at a theme park, web designer. I was in the military. And we found ourselves still wanting to perform, so we got into this Frankie Valli Four Seasons tribute group that did a lot of corporate and private events. And we were doing an event in Vegas, off the Vegas Strip, and afterwards it was kind of a tough performance. And we found ourselves in the spa, in the hot tub, having a conversation, lamenting sort of not doing something of our own, and maybe there's a different concept out there that we could... And we hatched the idea in the hot tub, true story, in the hot tub, we hatched the idea, and we came out of that ad hoc meeting with a website, the basic concept, the name, and from there we kind of kept going. That was 3.5 years ago. We went live in January of 2012.
And the other gentlemen who are in the group, Danny Tater, of course, is in it.
Daniel Tater, I believe he's been on the show before. You also have Brian Purcell and Sean Peruca. So we're the foursome that created The Company Men.
Well, such a great blend of voices, Stuart, really. So let's take a listen to this.
Yeah, we're going to take a little listen.
And the name of the tune is?
I'm Taking You Home. It was our first music video that we dropped a few weeks ago.
Awesome. Here we go.
Were you in a hot tub?
Stuart Ambrose. We'll be right back.
is feel good music, to
it's
say
terrific.
The least, right?
Yes, thanks. And beautiful.
See, they don't
clean
write music
voices.
Like this anymore.
Well, thank you. We're very, very proud of it. Each of the albums, each of the songs on our new album, Throwback Pop, kind of draws inspiration from
which
different
is your hashtag,
artists.
By the way.
It's hashtag Throwback Pop, but we've whenever we say it, that kind of confuses people, so we just call it Throwback Pop. But yes, there is a hashtag in front of it on the title name, and you know, we've kind of styled ourselves as America's favorite mashup group. And that, we combine songs from the last 6 decades in our show and combine it with top 40 from today. So when we were writing our original music, we didn't want to lose that mashup vibe, if you will. So we drew inspiration from different artists over the last 6 decades to create different, songs.
I love that you are writing your own stuff. It's great to be a fantastic cover band. I know you do some standards as well as some numbers in your, is that right? As well as originals?
We do, yeah. Our show is actually about 2/3, 3/4 mashups. So,
okay.
Two-thirds, three-quarters covers, and then original material, some of which we're, partial writers on, some of which are other writers, so it's a,
terrific.
But we're excited about it.
Now, you have, there has been a motivation behind why you named it Company Men, which I was reading about, which I thought was fantastic. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, sure. Well, we had these 9-to-5 jobs that we were, doing to support our families, and when we left them and literally hatched that idea in the hot tub, we
back to the
said, what are we going to call ourselves? And we... And this was, Mad Men was very hot at the time, obviously still is, and there were other, I think there's so many elements of our society right now that are looking backwards while looking forwards at the same time, and so we have always drawn inspiration from the 50s and 60s, kind of just as four guys. Heck, we were doing a Frankie Valli Four Seasons tribute group at the time, and so that's something, and that was special to us, and we said, what if we did this, and, hey, we all have these jobs, we're all in comp, and then it kind of came from there. We're all in companies. Hey, what if we call ourselves the Company Men?
But your work on stage, at least what I have seen on video, is very fully, beautifully produced.
Thank you.
You're just not standing behind microphones in a casual situation.
Our choreographer, Leah Seminario, has been just fantastic with utilizing choreography that, again, draws inspiration from the last 6 decades. A lot of Motown choreography, some current mashed with some current elements in our choreography today. And we do like to do a fully produced production. We like to call it kind of the TCM experience, if you will. And I know you appreciate that as a producer.
I do, of course.
Creating, even if it's little things, we did a show in Chicago recently, and it was in a venue that was very much more of a kind of a bar feel and stuff like that. But we still came in and worked with the staff to create tables, put candles in the tables, put a step and repeat with a red carpet out in the lobby. So whatever venue you're in, whatever you happen to be playing, create that experience that harkens back to the 1960s when you used to take your wife or your family out for a night out of dinner,
like
music,
club?
And drinks. Yeah, supper club. That's awesome. Absolutely. Like, our dream would be to host to have a venue, to have a headline show where you can really go and you have great food, great drinks, great ambiance, great company, and a great show.
I think it's just fantastic. You're a working actor, but to see artists form their own stuff, create their own projects, is just so empowering.
Yeah, thank you.
It's terrific.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun. I think the shocking piece of it, and people always ask, what didn't you expect? And for us, it's the fact that you think you're going to spend all your time performing and doing all the stuff on stage or in the studio, and in point of fact, what you spend most of your time doing is the business side of things.
Well, absolutely, and that's how you move through the process.
But, exactly.
And this man I sat down with a few years ago and talked to him about headlining Sterling's as a solo act before this all happened.
I know. Gosh, that
and
feels
he
like
he said,
yesterday.
Michael, he said, I'm dead set on getting into politics, and in the service and being good to our country and all of those wonderful things. And you did go in that.
I did end up
you
doing
the business.
I did, and I've continued to dabble in it in some ways, shapes, or forms. But it just when I thought I was out, it sucked me back in.
It's like the mob,
exactly. But I'm glad it did, and I'm glad I found.
We're
this
glad
group.
It did,
and it's been a wonderful, exciting, thrilling, anxious ridden. But also just wonderful process that we're happy to be a part of.
And you're going to get so successful, maybe already at this point, if Michael asks you again, I'm sure you'll say absolutely not, that we wouldn't ever deign to go and perform in front of you. We're too big for that.
No,
that
of course we would. We would always love to.
Fantastic, good.
We actually think that venue is a great venue. We we love that space over at the Federal. It's a really great space. It's a wonderful place. We love what you've done with it.
Well, thank you, and you're welcome there anytime.
But thank you.
On to bigger and better things for the company, man, which are coming up, I'm sure.
Well,
right?
Shucks.
So here's my big question.
Yes,
for you.
Sir.
Now that you're doing this, nightclub concerts all over the country, all over the world, perhaps. Do you miss musical theater? Because you were so wonderful in musical theater.
I do. Yeah, there's a piece of me that, of course, misses that. And you miss telling the story from beginning to end. And I think we've tried, because all of us drew our roots in musical theater. Mm-hmm. And we have tried to retain that element of story in our show. We worked with Stafford Arima, fantastic director based out of New York, and we worked with him last year to really kind of flesh out some of that story and flesh out, who are we? And I think every good concert does that. But of course, yeah, there's a piece of us that always misses, doing the either wonderful pieces that we've grown up with since we were children or new works.
Mm-hmm.
And we still do dabble in it from time to time if there's a break with the company mentoring schedule, that we'll be able to kind of do a workshop or a reading here or there. But, at the end of the day, this is the job that I have right now, and we're happy to be doing it. But, yeah, of course, there's always a piece of me. And that's not to say that at some point, we won't go back to that at different points in our career.
Well, and financially, of course, what you're doing right now is a bigger piece of the pie than perhaps musical theater would be able to give to you, because the theater, everything is...
You don't make a lot of money in
you
the theater?
You do if you were on Broadway.
No,
you're
okay,
a star.
All right, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but and even that, I think, has its limitations.
Because you have to live in New York to do it.
Yeah.
But hey, the Temptations are playing Broadway. They're doing it right in a couple of weeks.
Well,
so maybe, you never know, maybe the company men will have a little sit-down limited run there someday. Maybe.
That's not far from possible,
who knows?
Is it?
I also had a question for you. Something caught my interest in your show about bringing up the subject of what is a gentleman. And kind of exploring that, and that maybe we've lost, that gentlemanly behavior. What do you want to say about that? What is a gentleman, Stuart?
It's something actually that is very important to us from both a foundational view and also a branding view. So there's both sides of it for us. It's really, really key to the company men idea, concept, and brand. And for us, I think we started off looking back at what was a gentleman. What was that gentleman from the 50s and 60s? And if you listen to our first tracks, it really is very, looking to just the 50s and 60s for a lot of inspiration. What we wore was very 50s and 60s. Then we started looking, and when we did a residency at the Key Club, we started asking ourselves, what's a modern gentleman? What is the gentleman today? And we drew from that inspiration from even Diageo's the spirits company. They had a modern gentleman campaign, and you see that in the Tonight We Tangeray ads, the Kettle One campaigns.
Yes.
And we looked to those, and if you look at our outfits with the black suits and the thin ties, and we looked, so, okay, what's a gentleman today? What does that mean from, a concept? And really talking about that, we were all young fathers at that time. And, some of us had young boys or young girls. And, what is it? What are we going to be teaching? What values are we going to be teaching our children? And I think the question that we started to ask with this new material and our new tour, our throwback pop tour that we went on, is what's a gentleman going to be? And now, because now our kids are a little bit older, and now this question starts to become a little more real. And you start asking yourself, oh my gosh, and with all the texting and social media out there and all the influence that are facing our children, we find it's the concept, and we will have people come up to us after our show, and we'll talk a little bit about it in our during our concert, and we'll say, and they come to us and they say, thank you for, even asking the question, because nobody's asking it today.
Of course.
And that's one of the things that we find really important. So it's, I think it works from a branding perspective, but I think there's something deeper about it for all of us, because I think it's actually a very real issue. What is a gentleman?
There's a great picture of them taken at some point. I'm not sure how long ago the picture was taken, but you're all getting off of a Learjet.
Okay.
All in beautiful
suits. Funny story
suits,
behind that.
All in shades. Yeah, you look like the Shark Tank,
coming
in.
Thank you. The cool thing is, I don't know if you saw, there's two versions of that picture. One of the versions of the picture has then a 66 Buick parked right in front of it.
I didn't see that.
Front of the G4. Yeah, that was, we actually, it was very, we had this connection that was able to get us onto a private airfield, and we wanted to do this photo shoot. Just, you know, it was kind of just wonderful backdrops that you just don't get normally. We had this, so we set up this whole photo shoot with a great photographer, Scott Witter, and we were on there, and there was we were supposedly going to be able to shoot in front of this G4 for about 15 minutes, and then at the last minute, the owners of the jet canceled their trip, and so the manager of the airfield said, "Hey, you guys can shoot on this for the next couple of hours." So we just went crazy. We pulled up the Buick right there and got some great shots. But you know, what's so also funny about that day was the funny thing was we shot all these things in front of this Learjet or the G4 rather, and it was at the very end of the day. The photographer, we were walking from point A to point B, and he sees something and he says, "Oh, will you just stand right over here?" And he snapped this picture. It took maybe 10 seconds to set up and another minute and a half to shoot, and that was our primary picture that we used for next year. So it just goes to show you, sometimes spend all this time planning things, and it's the thing that just happens at the moment.
Well, you've certainly brought class back into the concert stage.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
That. Yeah, and that's nice. And as you said, that goes to Mark's question. You know, what is a gentleman? That's who you guys are.
Yeah.
And a good role model for young people.
Well, thank you.
As well.
Well, on that note, I think it's time for our weekly arts calendar. We even had some little applause there from Leslie. Thank you for that little clapping sound effect.
Sort of joining the little people clapping under the table. There
it goes. Live arts calendar.
Yeah, so you want to kick it off there, Mark?
I absolutely do. So, devised by Sondheim and Julie McKenzie, with music and lyrics by Sondheim and musical direction by Richard Berendt, putting it together at LA's Chromaloom Theater at the Attic, is directed and choreographed by Los Angeles Ovation Award winner Kate Kaplan. This spectacular musical review, showcasing the Tony Award and Pulitzer Prize-winning songs of Stephen Sondheim, celebrates Sondheim's incomparable career in musical theater and features nearly 30 songs.
So the synopsis, you might be wondering? Well, this is it. The show takes place at a Hollywood movie premiere party in the home of the producer-director and his trophy wife, leading lady, a composer and his date, a wannabe starlet, along with an up-and-coming screenwriter. They spend the evening together reflecting on the illusions and desires of relationships intertwined amidst life in the showbiz, in Hollywood. Putting It Together is on stage now, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. through December 21st.
Whatever you do! Anytime I see Whatever You Do, I think you've got to amp up the charge a little bit. Whatever you do, don't miss the experience of Sondheim at the Chromaloom Theater at the Attic, 5429 West Washington Boulevard in Los Angeles. For tickets, priced at a modest $28, visit www.crtheater.com or call 323-205-1617.
And a good friend of State of the Arts, Kristen Towers Rolls, who is the granddaughter of Catherine Grayson, the great movie star from the MGM motion picture days, is one of the stars of this show. So she always brings to the table an amazing performance. So that's a reason enough to go see it. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're going to now, ladies and gentlemen, bring the raise the bar of beauty in this room.
Whoa, Stuart, no offense intended. Raise the bar. I'm sorry about that.
Absolutely true, though. It's absolutely true. She's gorgeous.
As the only woman in the room, no offense taken.
So to pick up where we left off at the beginning of the show, after her Broadway and television debuts, our guest here in this section of our show gave up acting for almost a decade to focus on dancing. Ultimately, she became a soloist with Hubbard Street Dance Chicago, one of the country's most distinguished contemporary dance companies. She eventually returned to acting in musical theater, not only on the Broadway stage in Victor Victoria, starring Julie Andrews, but My Fair Lady with Kelsey Grammer and Kelly O'Hara, at the New York Phil, and Macbeth with the Shakespeare Project, to name but a few. After moving to Los Angeles, she made her mark in television and film and has enjoyed being a guest on such episodic shows as NYPD Blue, Criminal Minds, and season 2 of True Blood. On film, she can be seen in the feature Chasing Ghosts and in an impressive group of film festival shorts for which she has received awards as Best Actress. Her return to daytime television came in the recurring role of Rose on The Young and the Restless.
That was fun.
But today she's here to talk about her co-starring stage role in Candor and Ebb's musical Steel Pier, which will be presented this coming Sunday, November 23rd, for one night only, as part of Musical Theater West's acclaimed Reiner Reading Series at the University Theater on the campus of Cal State Long Beach. Please welcome the multi-talented Leslie Stevens.
Give it a That's awesome. Yeah, I want that good, at home.
You want to take it around with you, right?
Yeah, I do.
Hello.
So, hello.
How exciting to be a part of a show that doesn't get done very often.
It is very
and
exciting.
And a Kander and Ebb show at that.
I know. Right? It's, I actually saw this on Broadway in 1997. It's one of the last...
Didn't Gregory Harrison do it on Broadway?
Yes. Yes, and Karen Ziembo was a friendly acquaintance of mine. I didn't know her real well, but we were friendly.
I had a big crush on her for a long time.
A lot of people in common. But it was a show that I remember seeing, and then it struck me as funny. It's like, and why isn't it done? I guess this opportunity is, I guess that's kind of the question Musical Theater West is looking at, taking a piece that isn't done a lot, but has all these fantastic elements and giving it like an opportunity to be fleshed out, even though it's a staged reading. It's staged reading. Maybe they should just put staged in big letters.
Yes,
staged
no reading.
And well, singing.
And you know, that's that. And off, actually, what she's saying is not dissimilar to what we have the Musical Theater Guild in Los Angeles does, the very same thing. And it's a very, and you probably have done an MTG show, yeah? Intense. It's intense because you have a very limited rehearsal time.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You have a full orchestra.
That's how Leslie and I met.
17 pieces in the orchestra, and they're holding their scripts on stage and being directed, and
That is how we met.
We met.
MTG did a reading of something called Das Barbecue, which is a musical, a smash-up of Wagner's The Ring Cycle, taking all 30 hours of opera, smashing it together, not in German, and presenting it as a country-western musical. It was hilarious. But, yeah, there was all this choreography where you pick up your script and you sing the song, and I put it down, and I do a dance. I mean, it was that kind of twirling plates,
yeah,
as it were.
That's how we met.
Musical theater, or excuse me, the music, excuse me, the Theater Guild in Los Angeles has 25 hours of rehearsal, I think. Is that about what you have?
I think we get a magic 29. I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
It's a union thing. So if they have to put you on a break, go away. We can't see you. But that really means you go into your car and, like, you know, just, you know, absorb as much material as you can. It's such a great opportunity. You don't want to miss out on it. So I'm thrilled to do it. And it's
Who else is in the cast with you, Leslie?
Well, I haven't met everybody, but I have it written down. I know Gabriel Colomas is my sort of morally bereft husband, and Tracy Lohr is going to be playing a role that Deborah Monk played on Broadway.
So amazing, that woman. She just won the Ovation Award in Los Angeles for Best Featured Actress, I think,
in
Young Frankenstein, which I happen to be handling the PR for at Musical Theater West. Yes.
We all must go see it then. Absolutely.
Well, no, Young Frankenstein was last year.
When it's restaged, I mean.
When it's restaged.
When you put it back. Hey!
When they bring it back.
Yes.
Very smooth.
So Tracy Lohr, and there's a hilarious song that she'll get to sing. It's very, has all kinds of very naughty entendre in it, so that'd be loads of fun. And then Jeff Edgerton is playing Bill Kelly, who is this flyer. He's a stunt flyer that does sideshows, and he has this sort of, I guess you could call it a romantic lead. It's a little more interesting than just that.
Okay.
And then there, but everybody that they have, like, dancing and carrying on is awesome. Should I read them?
No, that, well, you can if you like, but you're out. You're the star here. You're the guest right here in front of us.
I guess, yeah. I guess that would be
I will tell you that amongst your cast, though, I must say, with regard to a couple girls, Jennifer Stratton, amazing performer. Jeffrey Christopher Todd, also a wonderful guy. He's just went on to a soap himself, actually. Madison Clare Parks, who you're going to be working with, is the daughter, a granddaughter of Betty Garrett.
Yes, yes. I know Madison.
Yeah.
She just freaks me out because she's not 10
is
anymore.
Unbelievably talented, and she's 16 years old. 16, 17 years
old? Yeah, something like that. She's remarkably poised.
And for those listeners who don't know who Betty Garrett is, and one of the people in the room who also doesn't know who Betty Garrett is, maybe Sterlo, can you broaden
you know
my
what?
Horizons?
She was one of the great Broadway's, you know, performers of her time.
You
and
probably
also
know her from the film of On the Town, where she played the cab driver, Hildy, and she was hilarious.
Well, it was kind of a, just in a real kind of rough around the edges gal who was just, you know, all woman and fun, and she was a great singer, and she was a great dancer, and she was the, you know, the sidekick to somebody, and always had that great repartee. And
like this charming bounce about her. I got to work with her a few times. She's
what a lovely lady she was.
Now, I'm going to get to your very impressive. You really have done some remarkable things in your career. You are what is called a triple threat. I also am a triple threat. I act, I cook, I do impressions. Your version of the triple threat is, I think, more impressive. Or really both of you, I guess I could say that.
I feel like
about
that whole terminology has got to change now, because really the demands of anybody doing this now is to sing, to act, to dance, which, in my opinion, if I may say, is not to sway to the downbeat. Just saying.
Just saying,
not to be snarky. But, you know, there is actual a lifetime of sweating,
of course,
you know, involved in that. And then the demands now is, and can you do some silks, play the flute, and, you know, possibly do it in Chinese? Like, they just keep the layers of demand keep going. Instead of feeling like that's unfair, I feel like, hey, I guess I'm still going to be learning stuff.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
bravo.
That's what I kind of feel like, the door is still open. So, but I teach also a lot of college students, and they're coming into musical theater knowing this.
Yes.
So it was, I am of the generation that they were still separated long, long ago.
Right.
Where the singer sang and moved a little, or sat on hay bales and sang beautifully. And the dancers came out from the sides and danced like crazy and then stood in the back and sang along reasonably well. That's absolutely no longer the case.
Now, you grew up in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You, something in your, I think it was your bio, you said, so you were cast as the ingenue lead in La Cage aux Folles, mm-hmm. and you were on a soap, playing mm-hmm. a villain mm-hmm. on a soap. And then you said that it was all moving too fast. So then you took a step back.
Oh, well, yeah, I did. I mean, it was awesome, but I was a teenager living by myself in Manhattan, rowing my own boat and going out for cocktails a lot, and not really, it's not about the cocktails. It's about...
Where were your parents?
They were at home in the Midwest.
So they let you go to New York all by yourself?
Well, I made a compelling argument. I just didn't know what I was talking about.
I like those kinds of arguments.
Well, that's the joy of the youthful fervor. You know, it's like, I knew what I wanted to do, and I was on fire with it, and they believed me. And then apparently so did the people who hired me.
Right.
But at a certain point, I just didn't have any emotional foundation to then go home and be centered.
Yeah.
You know, so what is an 18-year-old to do, you know? I had a great experience, and I have to give also, I don't have to, but the people that I worked with, because it was remarkably precocious, of course, as a teenager, trying my damnedest to sound like a Cole Porter or a sophisticate, reeling. All my vocabulary was totally from listening to Sondheim recordings or, other lyricists that were witty. I was doing my best.
Right.
But those people that were in shows with me, who were young adults, they let me be a grown-up. And I didn't know they were sort of standing around the edges to make sure I didn't do something
that's
real
beautiful.
Stupid. I only know that now that I'm an adult, and I really appreciate that.
So that was your family. Those were your family.
Oh, yeah. I call it the brotherhood. And it's not only gay men, but the brothers. There are a lot of fabulous people of all proclivities and genders. But
in the theater, that's...
In La Cage aux
Folles, yes.
The brotherhood, abortion. They let me play grown-up girl going to cocktail parties, and they had my back in a way that I didn't. They kept it so I didn't feel belittled. I appreciate it very much.
That's very nice.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
And
nice
your this Steel Pier is focusing. It focuses on the dance marathons of an earlier age. I think Depression era. Is that right?
This is a really interesting story. And I mean, Kander and Ebb, I think they're sort of fascinated. Not only that period, but they're drawn to that period, Chicago, late 20s, that sort of like sizzle and sensuality that had kind of a raw edge. I think some of their cabaret, obviously, is just a little bit later 30s.
Yes.
So this is early 30s America. The dance marathon kind of movement was extremely popular. The stamina or the endurance events were really popular for people to watch. Sort of the real life drama of, I guess it's, you know, their version of The Voice, where you're watching the real life drama of people like to triumph or cave under pressure or under exhaustion. Mm. So in order to tell this story, there's going to have to be a lot of dancing. Otherwise, they're already in rehearsal. One night of rehearsal, they staged two full like numbers that are all danced and sung through.
So you've not had your first rehearsal yet?
I did have my first rehearsal where I learned music, and then I sat and watched the dancing rehearsal because I was I don't know, I'm just trying to inhale the material and as much as I can. If I see what they're doing, then I'll already know how I fit in.
Right.
Like, I'll already see where the holes are, you know, so that I don't get run over. but I'm very excited to be a part of this story. And
is it your first time working with musical theater?
It is. So this was also a tremendous opportunity. It's most of the other artists I have encountered in other places or in other shows or have seen their work, but this is a great chance to jump into their world because they're so well regarded.
They are. They're one of the most successful regional musical theater companies in all of California, perhaps the West Coast, actually. But and they do very high quality, top Broadway, you know, work on their stage. It's fantastic.
I just saw Big Fish, which just closed last weekend, and that's a Broadway show that I think it was.
Did not make it.
It didn't run for very long.
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting piece, and they did a beautiful production. And they
it was based
they
on the film.
It was based on the film. Is it Tim Burton directed the film?
Yeah, we were discussing that last week.
Right. And they did a beautiful job. They bought the Broadway sets and costumes. And there was just wonderful work being done in that, but also that a regional theater was willing to include in their season something that their subscription audience most likely never saw, and it was absolutely embraced. It was sold out, the show I was in, and the rest of their closing weekend was sold out. So I really give them kudos for not just counting on The King and I, which is also brilliant, but, you know, bringing in, it's really cultivating your audience to have an appetite for new work or
which is crucial.
New ideas. And so the reading series I also think is awesome because that's another way they're supporting that. I don't know when they take a nap.
And
know,
well, the producers of that. The producers of that series are very, very passionate about bringing these types of events to the theater stage. Michael Betts and David Lamoureux, who is an amazing musical director. I'm sure he's musical directing this show.
He actually...
Or is he not?
Is not. I think he's one of the producers on this, but I have had experience with the Lamoureux, like,
the
dynasty. Lamoureux They're
von
amazing.
Trapp family.
Yes, I call them the sexy Osmonds.
The Lamoureux von Trapp
family. Well, because every member of this family has this gift of either they sing amazing, or in David's case, he is an amazing, he also performs as a singer. He does sing.
He's,
but he's an amazing musical director, one of the top musical directors in all of our theaters here in California and across the country, actually. He gets gigs everywhere. So.
No, I love those guys, and you never know where they're going to show up. They could musical direct your show, they could be starring opposite you, or they're playing flute in the pit.
That's right.
And, but I'm not exaggerating.
Or their mother's in the pit conducting. It's
a dynasty.
I want to go to Christmas at their house. That sounds fun.
Now, Leslie, as someone who did come to Los Angeles to do more film and TV and to kind of pursue that element, how do you feel about stepping into television as someone who is a dancer, a singer, an actress? You know, obviously there are huge differences, but I'm always interested in each artist's take on that. What is that for you?
Well, I can only say from my own experience coming here that, and I'm hardly unique, in the stream of, like, Broadway people going, you know, I'm going to go to California and get on a series, you know. And
I'm going to knock them down. They all speak like that, by the way. Every single one.
I should have tried that. But I feel like what my experience has been is that it's really been an evolution of not how do they see me and how am I doing compared to how they think, how am I working the room. It's really been a long shift to what kind of work do I want to be doing and how responsible am I being to putting myself in the space, not just in my outlook, but also in the skills to be doing the kind of work I want to be doing all the time.
Yes.
And so there's really no difference whether it's in the room or in a class or on the set because you're still in your own body and your own headspace.
Love that.
So it really... over time, the responsibility and the attitude is what really shifted, not to be how necessarily I was perceived, since I can't control that anyway, but how am I running my own the own work and why is it interesting? And then that just seems to gas up the adventure of doing it. And then strangely enough, these random things drop from the sky where you get to do it. And it's like, why would they ask me to do that? I've just been here in my own little space.
Yes.
In your own little corner of the world.
In my own little corner, in my own little room. And so it's. I think that's kind of set me up going forward, at least now. And I didn't come to that understanding without a whole lot of not embarrassing, but ego checks and tripping over my own misperceptions, perhaps.
Which can be painful sometimes, and you go through
embarrassing
it.
And obvious and yes. not so obvious to others. But I'm really excited because I don't like the work less. I like it more.
Yeah.
And it seems more and more relevant. So when I get to do something, I got to work on a film in August, and I was so thrilled. But on the 10% that was panicking and the other 10% was fantasizing about going to Cannes, those guys had to sit down while the other 80% just went to the story. And it was a great ride. Yeah. And those things, I can't control those.
Because the 80%, that's for its own sake. You do it for its own sake.
Absolutely.
It's a very, very good outlook on life.
Well, what else are you going to do? You know,
and your career.
Not
everybody
enjoyable.
Has that, you know. I know people who, when they don't get work, they go into a horribly deep state of depression, and it's everything that you can possibly do to help get them out of it.
Well, here's the other benefit that not just me, but my ground zero, or that sounds like an explosion, that's bad. My point of departure yes. is dancing. And dancing is, I believe, it's a bunch of endorphin addicts, ultimately, because we can't help it, kind of. It's kind of like the mob, what you were saying, Stuart. You know, it's like you think you're out, and then they pull you back in. But about being depressed mm-hmm. or anxious, just the act of doing it, physically changes you. It's not like we're all, giddy all the time. But I think that foundation kind of makes a difference. And that's funny. That's really a whole big number in Steel Pier is the man running the dance marathon saying, it's the depression. When you're broke, when you're depressed, everybody dance. And so they're actually manifesting exactly that idea. When they don't know what to do, they're choosing that physical expression.
Well, you've brought it around nicely.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And speaking of Steel Pier.
Yes.
We want to remind our listeners how they can see this on Sunday, November 23rd at 7 p.m., University Theater, California State University, Long Beach. And that is a beautiful campus, easy parking. Ticket price, you can't beat it, $27 in advance, $32 on the day of the performance. That's still a good break right there. And Leslie Stevens is playing Rita Racine in this show. Yes?
I'm thrilled to do it, and I'm one of the contestants, the hopefuls of this dance marathon.
Well, again, Musical Theater West being associated with this Reiner Reading series, and they have been, and it's very well supported. You can't get better than Musical Theater West is on the level, as I said earlier, with some of our major regional theater companies in Los Angeles, 3D Theatricals and Cabrillo Music Theater, and it's really Broadway in your backyard. So take advantage of something like this show, Steel Pier.
Absolutely.
Doesn't come along. You may never have a chance to see it again.
I want to just do it really quick, because I am really I'm not part of any club, like I don't get any perk kickback for this, but I am so a fan and supporter of Los Angeles theater. I mean, I love New York too, but I think LA theater for a long time has had some kind of pallor on it, as if it's not as interesting, or it's just TV actors trying to read an Odette's play and wandering about, you know.
Right.
And I don't think that's true at all. And what I've found is it's an incredibly fertile environment for all this ferocious creativity going on. Maybe because it's not going to be turned into a Broadway show two blocks down, they're just doing it for its own ferocious sake. And I think it's a fantastic time to be seeing and being involved in the scene here.
I think you're right too.
Yes, and yes, sorry. Yeah,
no, I was going to say that a lot of people say, you know, theater's dead in Los Angeles. It simply is not true.
What?
Yes, and
they need to get up off the couch and out from, in front of that TV.
Yes, and knowing
put their
our
phones down.
Absolutely.
And go see the live arts.
And knowing our demographic, I want to say to you all out there that strip clubs, that's not theater, not technically theater, so that doesn't count.
Well, now let's not be so hard on that.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. Now, speaking of theater and all fun things theater, we like to take this portion of the program to talk about some embarrassing moments you may have had in your lives.
This is kind of our baptism for
you. Yes. So the worse the better.
Gosh, mine actually is very, very recent. We started our Throwback Pop Tour at Club Nokia just about a month, literally almost a month ago. And it was a huge, you know, big production for us with full lights and a 7-piece band.
Wow.
And we were very excited. We were so happy to kind of launch our tour at this wonderful venue downtown. And the show is going fabulously well, except, and everybody who's a theater person out there is listening to this knows the mistake that you can make if you don't practice a costume change. And I knew I had this costume change at the end of the show where we kind of go into a much more of a modern look, and I rush off stage after my big solo, and I throw off my pants, and I take off my shoes, and not in necessarily that order, and I take, you know, I change my shirt. I'm doing everything, and I'm doing it all wrong, and I come back on stage, and I am giving it my all, giving it just 110% on the next big fast song. The show is coming to this climactic close, whereupon one of the wives, Daniel Tater's wife, looks up at Daniel from the second row and says, and mouths the words, "Check Stewart's fly." And unfortunately, it wasn't just any fly. It was a button fly that had nice, shiny buttons on it that were gleaming brilliantly the entire big number. So there I was, just kind of...
Big number about your open pants?
Big number about my open pants. Nice. And I'm not sure we're going to be releasing that part of the video anytime soon, but that was my most recent embarrassing moment on stage.
Bravo.
I like
hundreds
it.
Of people. Good times.
And real
good
quickly,
times.
Where can people get Company Men albums?
Okay, yeah, we're available. You can go to thecompanymen.com. Go to thecompanymen.com. We're available on iTunes to get our new album, Throwback Pop, and you can get our old mashups on from After Hours, our first album.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Terrific. Leslie, your story. Real quick.
Very quickly. LA Opera. I've danced in the ballet for years. We were doing a production of Don Giovanni. It was from Europe. It was very exotic. And at one point, instead of a garden, the floor was a grid with garden hoses of light sort of embedded in the floor. But they didn't always stay in the floor, unfortunately. And we were wearing 10-foot tall steel-beamed teepees covered in astroturf as trees. Underdressed.
Of course you were.
We were underdressed in corsets with half black tutus and fishnets because we were going to be Siberian Bond girls in the next scene. But we had yellow socks and yellow ballet shoes over that. So underneath our tree, we had yellow feet. Anyway, I was the shortest tree because I'm not really showgirl height. And the tree was a little big for me. Anyway, we're supposed to run out and do some things. And unfortunately, in the crucial moment, my tree clipped a garden hose and I went down, baby. I went down hard in a metal tree on it, and it stopped the orchestra. It was so loud. So everything stopped, and I unharnessed myself and crawled backwards, tutu butt first, out of my tree with my wig cap on and my corset and half a black tutu with my yellow feet while the audience is hysterical. It's silent. Yes. The composer is frozen. I mean, the conductor is frozen holding the stick in the air. I picked up that damn tree, put it on, and walked back to my spot.
Yeah. Back out the
anyway,
way you
so
came
that's,
in.
And that's how I'm known at LA Opera. They hire me to give talks about the tree.
Wow, that is awesome. And on that note, we must say goodbye. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to another State of the Arts. Leslie, thank you.
Thank you.
Stuart, thank you so much. Mark, you did another amazing
job. Thank you, Stuart. I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week on the radio.
All right.
Listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.